Welcome back to the MTR Network. This is Ro, and I am joined by one of my most favorite horror people, Richard Newby, and we are here to discuss The First Omen, because neither one of the boys for the MTR Network have seen it yet, and y'all, I can't wait. So, just to bring people up to speed, The First Omen is about a young American woman who is sent to Rome to begin her life of service to the church, where she encounters a darkness that makes her begin to question her own faith. Now, when they say begin her life of service to the church, she is a novitiate. She is waiting to take her vows to become a nun. It is a prequel to the original 70s Omen, which is 1975. So this one is set before it in 1971. It is directed by Arkasha Stevenson. It is from 20th Century Studios. It released in theaters wide April 5th, 2024, so this past Friday. It is 2 hours long. They have it in the category of horror slash mystery thriller. Y'all, this is a horror movie. There's violent content. There's grim, grisly, disturbing images and themes. There's some nudity. Y'all, this is a horror movie. Please don't let people be lying to you about, oh, it's just a bit of a, if you have a line that you don't cross between thriller and horror, this is on the other side of your line. Just don't. So Richard, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Ro.
I mean, we talked about Infinity Pool and I had a good ass time. So just expect me to be bugging you more, because that brought me great delight. Okay. So since I'm, you know, I talk a lot, we're going to start with you. What were your thoughts about The First Omen?
Oh man, I loved it. I thought it was incredible. I was already excited for it. So I do horror coverage for Fangoria. So I had talked to Arkasha Stevenson and Nell Tigerfree, who's the lead actress in this. I talked to them several months ago for an interview in Fangoria. And so, you know, my expectations were already high because I love what they had to say with it. And I felt like we were in for something special. And I definitely think it delivered on that. I mean, I was honestly shook by some of the stuff that they were able to get away with in this movie. Like without getting into spoiler stuff, I mean, especially like when you think about like, you know, 20th Century Studios being owned by Disney now, like the fact that this like was in a Disney movie and got a wide release, and not only that, but like you have a first time director who's a woman, and she was able to like push this through and like fight against. They were originally going to give it the MPAA wanted to give it an NC-17. Or make her cut down the scene, and she fought to keep some certain scenes in there. And I mean, wow, it's worth it. It's definitely something that you gotta see. I mean, there are points in the movie where like it was so intense that like my neck like clamped up from clenching my jaw so hard. But like you said, like it's definitely a horror movie. Like I don't know, you know, who's trying to dance around that, but it is
liars are dancing.
Yeah, it is pure, like, and you just feel the like discomfort just from the opening scene. It's just like that tone of horror just like seeps through all of it. Like it's not even just like the moments of gore or the score or anything. Like there is just like something that almost feels like slightly like sick and off-putting from the very beginning. It just like seeps into the film, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel in my heart that some people don't remember the original Omen, right? Because I've seen a couple of comments where people are saying, "Oh, the tone, the tenor." I was like, "No, this is pitch perfect." Like from the first above shot into Rome and like everything, like the setting, the feel, it's like they've got that weird creepy, like the musical setting, it sonically it felt like it made sense, but they pulled back enough on some of the more staid and stoic aspects that drive the original Omen or the First Omen. Because this is you know, it's before that, so they also give you this like this it's grim and it's gritty, but there's also this oddly dissonant hopefulness that comes from how Nell played we got to talk about Nell, how she played Margaret. And I was like, okay, this is more than just an indecent attempt. I was like, Arkasha is going 10 toes down. Yeah. And I think I could probably guess some of the scenes that she probably had to go fight for, especially considering we now live in a really, really weird, rewound kind of puritanical idea of what's necessary or essential when it comes. Yeah. So if you've ever wondered what graphic movies looked like when they didn't give a shit what the MPAA said, they're like, we're gonna do what we do and we're gonna argue with them later. The First Omen has got that for you. But nothing was gratuitous. Nothing felt unnecessary. Nothing. It like, she even managed to find ways to take things that happened in the original Omen with Father Brennan and shit he has said in that movie and work a rational, albeit horrifying, way of reconciling those two things together. And yeah. And I'm Catholic. My mother converted to Catholicism. My father converted to Catholicism, which is deeply ironic because they converted from like Southern Baptist and Pentecostal evangelicals. So God help all the people. And so one of my mom and I's favorite things to do was go back and look up old conspiracy theory, because we're bad Catholics, y'all. We're bad Catholics. It's fine. I was raised to question and teach the church. My mother's like, this is your spirituality. This is the faith. You ain't got to believe all the shit they say. So one of our favorite things to do was to go and find like conspiracy theories and myths and legends and look at the shit that was in the Apocrypha and, you know, all the secrets of the catacombs under the Vatican and all the like holy items that go in there and never see the light of day again. So to watch this movie and realize that she's playing with like one of the oldest fundamental tropes about religious horror, like the church within the church, you know?
Yeah.
The corruption of the crown and but she's doing it in such a way that the themes so screamingly relevant. Like she's
yeah.
So, yeah, like I don't know, man. I think at one point in this movie I think I said, you've got to be shitting me out loud. but the like there are little Easter eggs that are touches and like hat tips to what happens in the movie after this. But let's talk about like the original, like the organic story that she built here around Margaret. How do you feel, or how like you said, you got to talk to Nell. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about between like Margaret, the lead character, as this young, really clearly sheltered novitiate nun, I don't know why I'm saying the words when one word is the meaning, but leave me alone. It's early, y'all. And then how she played out that character and how they kind of played with the dynamics of her development.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the great things is that she comes in, you know, to this new church in Rome, and she's an American, and she's clearly like very like optimistic. Like you can see the nervousness on her, but she's also like optimistic and desperately wants to fit in, and you get this sense that she hasn't fit in a lot of places. And so one of the things that I like talked to Nell about is that she and Arkasha Stevenson really wanted to have the character like have these like small tics and small moments of awkwardness that a lot of times kind of get ironed out of characters. And one of the ones that I really noticed that's kind of stuck with me is early in the film, she's leaning against a wall. And she kind of slips and stumbles a little bit. She loses her balance. And it's just like such a natural, like human thing to do, but we don't really see those moments often, you know, in film. You know, there's, you know, like you were going back and saying with the original Omen, there is this stoicness that I think we, you know, tend to associate with kind of the classic filmmaking sense. And so I love that we have these like little moments in her discomfort when her friend, Luce gets her address and they go out to a bar. Like it's those little moments where you can tell that she's very sheltered. She's not comfortable with her body. And like that whole idea of like bodily autonomy is really interesting too, in terms of talking about the modern themes of this. Like even though it is set in the 70s and it's dealing with a lot of the repercussions of that time, such as you know, the mass amount of youths, you know, going away from religion at that time. And, you know, the time period is just a few years after the Time magazine is God Dead article. So it's interesting to see it, like, it fits within that, but it also fits within today, because I mean, like, you know, women's bodily autonomy is being, you know, suppressed, you know, Roe v. Wade and, you know, all of these Republican ideas and, you know, laws putting into effect this idea of, like, what women should be, you know, what they're expected to be, this idea of, like, motherhood being, like, the ultimate role of a woman, I thought is really interesting, too. Like, especially when you think back on the original Omen and even the sequels, like, the idea of it is centered around, like, this child being born, you know, and brought into the world because, you know, this mother lost a child of her own, and so, you know, it's replaced with Damien. And so it's hinged on motherhood, but the movies are not really about women. You know, it's Gregory Peck, you know, investigating, you know, into the origins of this child, into his mother, but there's no, you know, actual interest in the women in the film. I mean, you know, Damien's mother, I can't remember her name, his adoptive mother, Gregory Peck's wife in the film, like, she doesn't really have much of a role. We see that, like, she gets kind of depressed and that's it, yeah. You know, I mean, and then she gets pushed off the balcony.
Right.
And then even in the sequels, like, it's very, like, male-centric. And this is the first film within the franchise that I feel like is intimately concerned with women, you know, with the idea of, you know, their free will and how both, you know, the church and the government is this repressive force that tells women, you know, what they should be. But we also get to experience that, like, not only through the eyes of a female director, but also a female lead character.
Yeah. And picking up on that, I think that it resonates in a way, not just because they stuck to some of the thematic grounding from the 70s, but also in the sense that, like, you know, there's this whole really big, huge religious, they swear it's not religious, but I'm not dumb. I know propaganda when I see it. Like the trad wife movement, the stay at home wife movement, this reassertion of the idea of what's the role of a woman, what's your purpose here if you don't do these things, if you're not interested in that. And I was like, I'm more than my uterus, but thanks. But also this is also the time period when you're starting to see the shift from Vatican I to Vatican II, cloistered nunneries, you know, and them having a defined role in the community, because they were considered to be subordinate to the leadership hierarchy. They could not, you know, they can't lead mass, or not they did, but like if there's a priest or a man, then he's supposed to be the head and the fount of the faith. But they also play with this idea in here, and I think this was what was really compelling and fascinating to me, because you don't actually usually hear it said out loud. In terms of Catholicism, it's usually something people think more in terms of, like, Amish, where they have their the spring where they go roam and then they come back, mm-hmm. and then they make a, you know, profession of faith and adherence to the way of life. You've got Beatrice bitch ass up in here. Listen, I'm like, Beatrice fine, but Beatrice is going, she going to hell. Or maybe not. I don't know. Who's to say? But I think that's an interesting way. She's like, there's a moment in here, this isn't really a spoiler, where she says, you need to understand this body. You need to embody this body. You need to know what it is that you're giving up. And there are other scenes in there where they actually humanize the nuns. They're not just the robe, they're not just the cowl, they're real women inside of these outfits who laugh, they cry, they're assholes, they're, you know, they're nurturers, and all of these things. And she blends these in, and it happens so naturally that I don't think that she's attempting to be overtly political in this movie, but I think that she's making a solid case and a remind people that politics is just real life. The issues that become political are because of things that exist in real life, because everything unfolds really naturally. Like, you know, Margaret shows up. First of all, Cardinal Lawrence played by Bill Nye. I did not have Bill Nye in an Omen movie on my bingo card, and I'm very glad that he did this. But like, this connection and the way that she's playing, like a lot of people tend not to pay attention to the fact that Revelations, where a lot of the stuff that's in the Bible that's speaking about the Antichrist and all of those moments, those were added later to the Bible. Those were like, you know, them quatrains be quatraining. And I'll just leave it at that. But like, she's playing around with the subversive idea of all this stuff of like, you know, the Antichrist rising from Italy. Nobody said he lived there. And, you know, and all of these other things. And like, she's playing in the way that people cherry picked with things for power. She does some amazing things when she's building out and kind of refining the mythology that exists within the Omen universe to ground it in something that's so logical that it's absolutely horrifyingly unbelievable, even more than the original Omen screaming, "She was born of a jackal." Like everybody is talking about that online now. Like, oh, but how do they reconcile with that? Go see the movie,
right?
And get your life, and then scream your way through the third act. Just you gonna scream. But like the way that she blends in this very kind of 70s filtered, you know, light of the rising sun with these darker, grimmer, more hallucinogenic fever dream elements. I don't know how this is her first feature film.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm kind of scared of her. And I would like her never to make friends with the woman who made the Babadook, because I don't think I'm ready for that experience between the two of them. They had me fucked up. But this is a layered, I think, okay. So the mystery in this story is that she gets there and then she uncovers some things untoward that are happening at this orphanage, because obviously the nuns are running an orphanage and a home for unwed mothers. How did that hit for you? Like, I'm talking real broad, but the way that they kind of wound it up and the connective thread they made between her and the young girls who live in that orphanage, how did that work for you?
I appreciated that, because like, we get a sense, you know, and it's fully explained later about Margaret's childhood, but you know, you get the sense that like, she's never really had any friends. And so there's like part of her that is like desperate to connect with these young girls. And I feel like there's a part of her that is almost childlike. And I think that's kind of like the great divide within her, you know, as she uncovers the darker mysteries, that there is part of her that is innocent and a child, but then there's also part of her that, you know, is an adult woman who has to, you know, take some responsibility or be that nurturing, you know, presence, as you said, that many of the nuns are in the film. And so I like that aspect of like an orphan, you know, finding other orphans, you know, like herself, and finding that connectivity.
Yeah, I liked how they played with the outsider tropes for the relationship she develops there. And they don't rely on jump scares, but this shit's scary. Listen, There's a woman who plays a nun in this movie, and and I've never been more disturbed by someone just peeping around a corner at somebody else.
Yeah.
And
my first thought was like, I was like, how did they find her? I was like, where'd she come from?
Yeah, can we send her back? I would like her evaluated. Does she have a visa? Is she supposed to be here? I got questions. Look, I got all different kinds of questions about immigration that other people do. People are like, where are you on January 6th? I'm like, no, can you cross a stream? And what happens when we throw holy water at you? Can you freely move outside of a salt circle, ma'am? But like, I like the fact, and I think this is something about more of the director's perspective in centering things from a woman's point of view, without it seeming like she's trying to be like hyper feminist. I think it's just simply what the female eye finds to be disturbing is vastly different frequently than what men think women would find disturbing. And that's why sometimes they freak out when they find out we go to sleep like it's the lullabies to the ID channel. You know, it's like, it's a little bit of research. little nighttime lullaby, but a lot of blood, you know, gore, mess, and scary. And so they do jump scares and they do, like, you know, quick crazy cuts. But here she kind of did that more, that sinister watching, that looming, like, this child. And I mean all the children, I mean literally everyone in this movie who is not on the side of the conspirators, who you aren't too sure is who, they all have a sort of Damocles hanging over their head. And the way that they reintegrated the role of Father Brennan in this movie, as soon as he talks, I just wanted to scream and just be delightful. Because, like, come on. It's not an omen unless he says something at least once, as far as I'm concerned. And they hit those notes without beating it over the head with it. But yeah. There was this, that, like, the outsider tropes, I feel, played really well into what you were talking about, like the, you know, desperately wanting to belong. But I also felt like her need to tell someone who she sees in a position that she's previously been in herself, like, she's a living embodiment of, it gets better. It doesn't suck forever. Things change. Sometime, you know, and those moments where she was saying those conversations, none of the conversations or dialogue is filler. And everything, if you want to get to the end of the third act, as traumatized as you should be, don't pretend that there is a throwaway conversation in this movie, because there is not. And that is from the moment you see the number 1971 go across the screen. From that moment, you need to have your ears and your eyes clued in. But some people are complaining about the 2-hour runtime, but I felt like not more than 10 or 20 minutes too long. And that's simply because I felt like a couple of the scenes they let linger, maybe a little longer than necessary. And it was, but I also feel like she might have been trying to give us a tension break, so we came out of the movie sane.
Yeah.
So, thank you. I didn't mind the runtime. How did you feel about it?
No, I didn't mind the runtime at all. I mean, I feel like so many of those, like, 70s horror movies have, like, a 2-hour runtime, so it just felt like it was, you know, in that vein. But like I said, like, earlier, like, about, like, the little character details and moments. Like, I was really glad that those were, like, cut. Those were kept in there and weren't cut. Like, the scene with the nuns peeling the potatoes, that like really, like, humanizes them. And, like, I feel like a lesser filmmaker, you know, would have just made that a deleted scene, you know, and said that it's not pushing the plot forward. But I feel like this film, like, it's not only pushing the plot forward, but it's also pushing the characters forward, and, you know, our you know, whole conception of the life that these characters lead. And, like, kind of going back to your earlier point, where you talked about, you know, it's not like she's making an overly political film. She's just showing, you know, what life actually is, you know, for women so often. And that's a great point. And it also brings me back to the interview that I did with her, because she said that, you know, when she was a child, her mother would show her horror movies. Rosemary's Baby is one of the first things that she saw, and she was, like, 7 years old. And she said that, you know, her mom didn't tell her it was a horror movie, so she had no idea that, you know, it was classified under a certain genre. She said to her, it was just life. And I feel like that really carries through, with this film. Yeah,
that's beautiful. But I'm also starting to think that maybe all of our mothers were at some meeting, because my mother did the same damn thing to me. I had no idea that Rosemary's Baby, I was like, what is that? I did not know it was a horror movie. My mom, like, watched it. I was like, what is going on? And that was my introduction to the paranoid thriller. So it delights me to my giddy, you know, slightly twisted soul to know that that inspiration feel that is definitely in this movie. It was purposeful. But I think that some people are under appreciating and underestimating the hold and fear factor of what makes a good paranoid thriller, especially when you're making a religious horror movie. Because some of the more important things, like, she played in, like, there's a whole scene in here where she is clearly, for lack of a better way of saying it, Margaret is clearly losing her shit in public.
Yeah.
And, at first it just seems like, the fuck is going on with this girl? Because they've given you one setup that leads to a plausible mental issue kind of rationale for her behavior. But on the other side, there's also this other thing that you're pretty sure is going on. And the way that they kind of tap dance and play that really slowly, I thought that played beautifully into the theme and the idea about cultural sets, about what, you know, what about being a girl and being a woman and finding yourself in uncertain or upsetting circumstances and having things like the only thing that was missing from this moment, it would not have been period correct, is if somebody had just slid a little bit of Ghetto Boys While Mine Is Playing Tricks on Me. I'm not gonna lie, because it started playing in my head. I was like, yeah. But they did it so beautifully that they opened the door to conversations about things that women aren't sure happened to them, and them sitting with that in silence instead of saying something. Or the way women and girls get rebuked when they do say something and they run into disbelief, incredulousness, or just flat out anger. Because there's another scene in here where Margaret herself actually sets up and says, I want to talk to you and I promise I'll believe you. And then the person tells her something and right after she's like, please. I was like, bitch, what? But it was perfect. It was perfect because it was mirroring something that was, else was going on. And it just kind of let you have this whole bubble thing. And there is a very clear commentary about rape and friend danger and stranger danger that she just lets play.
Yeah.
And you've got a couple of sequences that you don't know what their actual place is in a linear chronological sense. And I love the fact that she played around with sequence of events, but she didn't play with time. Mm. Like, we never fall out of the pocket of time.
Yeah.
Up to and including the fact that this have to keep walking home in like the pitch of dark of night. And I just keep expecting to see like a top hat and a gang dude behind her, like Jack the Ripper gonna roll up on her. But like, they make the most of what they use in the world of Italy. So what did you kind of feel about how they set the movie for how it needed to be anchored in Rome? How do you feel like that worked?
First off, I love the overhead shots of the city, those establishing shots of Rome. I just feel like we like don't, and like the fact that it like felt period accurate with the lights and everything, like it feels like we don't get too many of those like really like broad cinematic landscape overhead shots of the city. And then like when you get into the actual city, like so many like corners and narrow walkways and shadows, and it always just feels like there's something behind you or something, you know, approaching. And like it's there's such like a, there's a hostility, I'd say, like to the city itself, which is interesting, because I mean, like, I've never been to Rome, but like I hear it's a beautiful, you know, place. But like in the way that it's being shot here, like, you know, every person that she walks across, like whether it's like the protesters or, you know, the men crossing the street, like there is something sinister about them. And even like even her driver, you know, there's something off about him too. And it's like, I don't know, like, would you be better walking than riding with
Right. I'm like, I feel like she's making game time decisions about whether or not she could trust him. But I also felt like that was just a really nice commentary about moving through the world as a woman, because some of the circumstances is very innocuous and she should be safe. And like, there's one situation where it seems like everything is everything and it's cool, and you're going to get kind of like a walk of shame moment, and it turns into one of the most horrifying moments in the movie, and I can't wait for y'all to see it. And that's all I'm gonna say. As you can see, it was so fucked up, I can't even not be giddy referencing it. But it also speaks to the everyday common weirdness. Like, you know, so I think the way you describe it is like probably the best explanation I've ever heard from it. And this is one of the first horror movies I've seen so far this year that's had multiple writers that I didn't feel like you felt like the narrative was fighting between the perspective of the viewpoints of the writers. So, you know, Keith Thomas and Tim Smith were Akasha's co-writers for this, right? Like all three of them together. And obviously they took the original story by, but I really felt like the narrative was cohesive and it was massively compelling. And then you throw in this insanely talented cast and you've got literal gold. Like, this movie made me want to go watch the original Omen, and I don't fucking watch that movie very often because I love me some Gregory Peck, but that movie bothers me. I think this movie might actually bother me more. This movie might replace this. This is still the Emily Rose. The exorcism is Emily Rose is still number one. And then the other movie about the one in the morgue, that's number two. But the Omen might the first Omen might now be like top three paranoid thriller movies for me. And I didn't expect to come out of a movie that's a literal studio horror movie.
Yeah.
Feeling that way.
Yeah, and like that's what's crazy about it is that it feels like it should be like an indie film or something because of how much it gets away with, but also like how much it has to say. And then also like going back to your point in terms of like, you know, women saying that they saw something or experienced something and not being believed. Like that's also interesting too when you – I watched the original Omen before going into this one. Mm-hmm. And so Thorne's wife – I had to look it up. It's Catherine. But, you know, Catherine has this moment of depression, and she, like, decides she doesn't want to have another baby. She wants an abortion. And, like, Gregory Peck's character, Robert Thorne, is just, like, completely just, like, unsympathetic. Like, you know, she tells him that she thinks there's something wrong with Damien. And he's like, oh, he's just playing. Like, he just, like, brushes it off so casually. And then, like, the film like never explores like Catherine's like feelings about it beyond that. It's just like kind of dismissed, and then, you know, Robert Thorne goes off on his investigation with the photographer.
Yeah, no, Catherine gets killed, and then but I also feel like that plays into like they ignore the nun, the nurse maid in the first movie. Yeah. But I think that they actually kind of set up that vibe for why that's going to play out with things that they do in the first Omen. Like, they don't ever overtly talk about the fact that only anybody cared about was Mr. Thorne, you know, the ambassador to Rome. Yeah. But I think that they do a really good job of, I guess I would say they pirouette very nicely into the very 70s perspective without ever disrespecting it, but regrounding it in ways that makes all that stuff have even more meaning. Because I think it is even more compellingly messed up that Catherine just basically is like fridged and like she's just iced. Yeah. After I watched this one, so you get in there, I was like, maybe I should. Yeah, because I did come home. I didn't watch it before I went in because I didn't want that to be too fresh in my mind, because I was trying to be unbiased about this, because I've been slightly disappointed so far with a lot of the horror movies this year, and I was less than hopeful. I'm not gonna lie, I was straight up, I was like, there's no way that the 20th century horror movie is gonna be the one that breaks my meh with horror. I was wrong. But like her roommate, who's a fellow novitiate, Marie.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like she's an utterly enthralling character. How they introduce her.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition between her and they set up between Margaret. It's a thing that for Sunday school and youth ministry classes, we had one that was run by a nun. Coolest bitch I've ever met in my entire life. She's also the reason why I smoked for many years, because I used to go out back and smoke with her and talk to her. Don't tell my mama. I feel like she reminded me of some of the nuns who were around like through the 80s and the 90s, who like they were attached to churches that had schools, because she was like, you know, she did like the sex ed class, and a lot of the guys were like, oh, what do you know about sex? What are you gonna do, just tell us not to have sex? She's like, no, I'm gonna tell y'all to learn to count. This is a 21 day cycle. Don't touch after day 11 unless you try to be somebody, mom, a daddy. I was like, oh my God, that's not how I thought this conversation was going to go. That, so it was this idea. She's like, you do know it's a vow of chastity, right? It's a vow of chastity. It's a choice. And I was like, I mean, I'd never really thought about that. So what you're trying to tell me, you was for the streets before you was for Jesus? What? But the deep irony of the fact that they kind of play around with that idea of this is a choice, this is a vow, this is a thing that you should be doing knowingly. This shouldn't just be a thing that naturally happens to you because this is just the next thing for you in your place of safety. And the idea that they play around with that concept of safety, not just how you were talking with how they shot the city of Rome, but how they shot all of the relationships that she developed between women, because there's always this idea that, oh yeah, you know, women, you know, we ain't all we got sometimes. We are the problem. And them building that together, I thought that was fantastic. And I loved the little touches that reminded me of some of the ways that the horror and the religious aspects or the prophecy aspects were handled in Suspiria. I feel like she like sprinkled a little bit of that magic over this. So yeah. It's got a little bit of a folk horror edge without falling out of its pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that too. Yeah. There's I love the, not to get into like spoilers, but like, I love the whole like jackal aspect of it.
Look, I'm still not okay. Don't keep talking. It's fine. It's fine.
I just like you said, like earlier, like, you know, like a lot of people online have like been like, oh, how is this going to make sense? And like, I saw somebody say like, they didn't know if they wanted to see the movie because they didn't know how they would make it make sense with the original. I'm just like, see the movie. Like, that's such a weird, like,
yeah,
hang up. But yeah, like that just felt like very folk horror-ish, the way that was done. The thing with the, I'm trying not to spoil anything, but there's like a part with like, there's a mask put over someone's face and it's tied tightly around their head. Which not only that feels folk horror-y, like, you know, kind of a, folk sacrifice, but then we see that image repeated when, Maria takes her vows and they're putting on the habit and they tie it like really tight, like constricting, like she's like bound to this thing. And so I love the, like, the relationship between folk horror and Christianity in this, because I feel like they are very much tied, you know, like I think one is more largely accepted, but I think they're pulling from a lot of the same ideas. And it's kind of just like, you know, because of who's in power, one is seen as valid, where the other one is seen as, you know, something that should be hidden and buried. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I love how she did that. And she just kind of laid it out there, because let's be real. One of the most effective ways that the Catholic Church was able to spread itself was to draw one-to-one comparisons to more like native religious and spiritual practices in the places that the Roman Empire invaded. And she just kind of lays them next to each other. And I'm like, ow, okay, reminder. And then she just, you know, uses them to just fuck with you and traumatize you over and over again. But I never felt like she beat a dead horse. I felt like everything was like the period production was amazing. The costuming was like top tier. Again, whoever dressed Maria, God bless you, and you're going to hell. but I also felt like they gave it this legitimate kind of fighting energy of the 70s of, you know.
Yeah.
And that all kind of heightened everything else that was happening within this cloistered environment in the most compelling way. But I also liked how they played around with the idea of how they presented the church within a church. And I know if you can't see me, but I'm doing literal quotation marks because there's no other way to say it without spoiling all of the fun, and I will not do that for you. But they laid those things next to each other, and then she kind of just drove her stories through it. She threaded that needle so perfectly that you're gonna come away with an unmerciful view of a lot of different things, but it's also going to totally shift your perspective on others. And I don't know that I've watched a horror movie that owned the ways in which it wanted to be suggestive, horrifying, and traumatizing so much in a really long time. Like she's no regard for our well-being.
it's really just like the perfect blend of elements. Like it almost feels like alchemy or like something, you know, supernatural went into the making of it, because like it's one of those films that you like feel to your core and it just like sticks with you. And like as much as I like enjoy, like I mean I love horror, but it's like so rare to like see something that like it's more than just like nightmares or being scared, but something that just like it feels like you've kind of like seen something or a part of the world that you shouldn't have been shown, you know?
Somebody pulled back the veil and I looked through too long, you guys. I stared too much into the abyss. There's no going back. But it's also playful and I feel like the way that it is real, it makes so much sense. And there's a scene in here that you don't realize the importance of a conversation that happens earlier, where it obviously it's in Father Brennan's voice. So, I mean, maybe you need to see the movie twice so you can actually listen to the words he's saying rather than just that growly ass tone of voice he brings to the table. But he says a thing and you don't understand the importance of it until you're right before the pinnacle of the movie. You're just like, oh God, oh God, oh God, there was a woman in my screening. And all I heard as the sequence was happening, because like the Nell as Margaret is actually having visceral tics to what is happening to her. And all I heard from behind me was, somebody need to kill her. And I was like, this movie is a success. I the moment you get there and you realize that you have reached, you crossed the Rubicon of just kill it with fire. Even when you know what you're saying, the movie is a success. And they have at least three moments like that in this movie, but that one, the very final one, is perfect.
Yeah.
And it's messy, it's skin crawling, it's definitely trauma inducing, but it's also has this light and hopeful craziness to it, and like this single-minded, you know, rage against the dying of the light sensibilities, but the way that they're playing on both sides of that myth, because Father Brennan stands on one side raging against the dying of the light, and apparently there's some other priests who stand on the other side who think what they're doing is raging against the dying of the light, and the way that they play around with the concepts of power and what that means and manipulation and control, I think that speaks very, very loudly to what's happening to a lot of countries that are falling into this rabid theocracy in a way that it feels like for them it's rational, but to all the rest of us unsuspecting motherfuckers, we're waking up to where we're like, what is this? And I think that she kind of also hit those notes. But you never forget that you are dealing with a movie where people are fucking around with demons.
Yeah.
And I feel that we should probably stop talking at that point, because there's nothing we can say after that that isn't a spoiler. Do you disagree? I mean,
I agree. I gotta keep it in check.
I've been giddy with delight and doing everything I can not to scream about this movie, but I have to say, if you had to rate this movie 1 out of 10, what would you give it?
Give it a 9.
I am at a 9, and I'm messed up in the head to be saying that, because I saw Monkey Man, and I think I gave it an 8.5 and a 9. And yeah, no, this is a 9. Like it does what it's supposed to do as a supernatural horror. It does what it's supposed to do as a religious horror. It is a messy, messy, like traumatizing religious horror. And it literally, you know, to borrow from La Roche, it did what needed to be done. I don't know what else you say besides that. So like I said earlier, the first Omen opened in theaters wide April 5th. I don't know what you do with your time and your money. If you are going to movie theaters and you like original stories, this may be existing IP, but this is a wholly original, absolutely stunning prequel. It's the Omen needle drop you didn't know you needed. And yeah. And if you've ever wondered why our parents feel the way they do about their classic horror movies, we now have a director, Karsha Stevenson, who is here to explain that to you and fuck up your life. But yes. I mean, you want to give your elevator pitch for why people should see this movie, Richard? Because I'm crazy. Yeah, no. I mean, yes, but thank you for joining me today. If you follow Richard Newby on Twitter, you may have found out at some point in time that Musky Boy murked his original account. So go find him on his new one, because things are always fun over there. Good God. Catch his articles in the Hollywood Reporter and Fangoria and Bloody Disgusting. He's had some really great ones come out recently. And you like takes that shouldn't be. If you like an op-ed that's an actual op-ed rather than a hot take, read Richard Newby. He does know the difference. But if you like a hot take that's just going to make everybody's head explode and be controversial, please, by all means, do get with your life and do these things. This black man ain't got no sense, and he really does not care. He does not care. He'll troll you back, and it's fun. It's a good old time. Am I lying?
You're not lying. That's the truth.
I'm just saying. I'm like, you sitting over here smiling like I'm bullshit. You know. No, what no, I know. Okay, you know what you do. Put this on me. Okay. be sure to follow us on the main feed, MTR Network, or Movie Trailer Reviews on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and The World is Shrinking, or wherever you listen to your podcast to download to your device. We always appreciate you. We are slowly getting back on our bullshit at the MCR Network for movie reviews, TV reviews, and Depalm has been holding it down. So if you are not listening to the UPod, that is another crazy black man that you are missing out. Thank you for joining us here at the MTR Network, and I'll catch you on the flip side.